Hey, all you listeners out there in podcast world, this is the Front Row Network. This is Jay Hoffman. I'm your special guest host. Have a couple other guests with us today, but we, for this Memorial Day special, are going to cover Saving Private Ryan. Now, I might not have a familiar voice to you. We've been together a few times on a couple military podcasts. Military movies that we reviewed, and then we talked about Sandcastle on Netflix. We talked about the movie Fury, and like I said, now we're going to hammer out the big dog, Saving Private Ryan. What better time, 75th anniversary of D-Day coming up here June the 6th. What I wanted to start with is just get introductions from our two guests. We'll start with Mr. Ian Flug, and maybe you'll tell us a little bit about your military background as well.
Sure. Hello. I joined the Army Infantry in 2004, right after high school, and then have deployed to Iraq twice since then in 05, 06, and then 2009. And here I am.
All right. And the ever-important question that we always ask everybody, what's your favorite movie?
Oh, I'm going Die Hard all day.
Now the question is it a Christmas movie or is it not?
It is a Christmas movie.
All right, my man.
Soundtrack.
I knew we had you on for a reason. All right, our other guest here, we've got John Miser with us. He's been with us on a few of those other podcasts as well. So, John, you want to give just another brief introduction for those who've maybe never heard you before?
All righty. Yeah, I'm John. I enlisted in the Marine Corps in 2002 to 2006, deployed to Iraq, Okinawa, Korea. Iraq was in 2005. So,
okay. All right. And myself, I joined the Army 2004, did a little stint with 1st Cav Division, switched over into the Illinois National Guard, did a deployment to Iraq 09 to 10. So right here, you got a couple of more modern era veterans, but we always like to get on here and kind of break down some of the military aspects of these war movies. And like I said, with D-Day coming up, the anniversary of D-Day coming up, few facts for everybody that you may not know about D-Day. There was approximately 156,000 troops from the U.S., the United Kingdom, Canada, France, Norway, and other allied nations. 6,000 ships and landing craft were used, 50,000 vehicles, 11,000 planes, and 12,004 total killed, wounded, missing, or captured. And the overwhelming majority, the Allied forces, that was United States. Approximately 326,000 Allied troops who crossed by June 11th with more than 100,000 tons of military equipment. And there are approximately 496,777 U.S. World War II veterans still alive at the end of 2018.
Awesome.
So those are some pretty massive facts. And the thing is with this movie, what I think there's the scene in the whole movie that everybody remembers. You can't shake that scene, the beach scene. And before we get into the beach scene, I just want to know, what are your overall thoughts, impressions on Saving Private Ryan? And we'll kick it back over to John. We'll start with you, see what you think.
Well, overall, it is probably in my top three favorite movies, period, and it's definitely my favorite war movie. I remember when it came out, I thought that it stood alone by itself in portraying what combat looked like, but I did not know what that looked like, even, you know, it came out before I went in. But yes, you're right, that beach scene, I think when people first saw that, civilians themselves, you know, were just blown away how brutal and I would say real, you know, war yeah. was, and coming up on the beach. And then I do know that when they first aired it to World War II veterans before it came out in the theaters, that a lot of those veterans did say that it was so realistic that a lot of their PTSD symptoms came back.
Sure.
Were re-traumatized. So very real, very brutal. But at the same time, with it being one of my favorite movies, it's still to this day very hard to watch for a couple different reasons. For the fact with the mother when she gets, you know, the notification from the priest, in the war department, I tear up almost every time for that one.
Absolutely.
And when the general reads the bereavement letter, or the War Department bereavement letter to the Civil War mother, that part always gets me. And then,
yeah, from Lincoln.
Yes, from Abraham Lincoln. So, and that's a lot of, there's a lot going on in this movie, so I'm glad to be talking about it.
Cool. Ian, what are your thoughts?
This movie was basic training for me before I actually went to basic training. So, like, all the brainwashing that's supposed to occur in boot camp, I already had it with Saving Private Ryan. Just wanted to be like Mr. Patriot after that movie. Always felt like that was a huge driving force for me to eventually enlist in the Army and infantry. You know, just always wanted to be on the front lines after seeing all that crazy stuff.
Very cool, man. I agree with everything that you're saying. In my opinion, when I think of this movie, and like I said, we've been on here talking about a couple different war military movies, and this to me is the pinnacle movie. It's the war movies that all, and not even by a little bit, I think it's by a long shot. I just think it's the pinnacle war movie. That's why when we talked about doing this to me felt like a completely different episode from the other stuff that we're doing, because we're talking, like I said, in my opinion, the big daddy,
yeah,
of war movies, especially of the greatest war, a war that I think we can all look back and say a noble war. We had a true enemy unleashed in the world, and that's why I think this one just, it feels like a totally different thing when we talk about it. So that being said, let's jump right into the scene, right? I believe it's 25 minutes long. I didn't test it exactly, but the battle scene's approximately 25, or not the battle scene, but the beach scene is approximately 25 minutes long of sheer violence, brutality, as well as, you know, courage and confusion. And I mean, it covers about the gamut of human emotion. And just watching it, knowing it's a movie, it's still a very visceral experience. Now, what I think about it is as a somebody in the current wars, you know, we train against guerrilla warfare. So to me, just seeing that and thinking about my time and what we trained on and what, you know, some of my fellow veterans have fought with, this seems so foreign to me in a way.
The force on force.
Yeah, just knowing exactly who the bad guy is and
right,
then just running at them and going for it. And
right.
I was just like, I can't even wrap my head around that, nor the insane bravery. I don't know if bravery is the word, or just, you know, is that what it is when there's no other choice? I don't know.
Right. Yeah.
But just that whole scene, just before it even starts, the tension, the way Spielberg ratchets that tension out.
People are throwing up, you know, seasick.
Absolutely.
Tom Sizemore puts a dip in, huge dip in. I love that part.
Yeah.
He doesn't give a crap.
Yeah. So before we even get to the battle and what it looks like, what do you guys think of the buildup they did when they're on those boats driving towards that beach and just the reactions they have? I mean, because I know I felt like, I've seen this movie however many times, and I still, my hands start to get a little shaky in them when I watch that. So what do you guys think?
Well, yeah, you're right. I mean, just the noise of the boats, and then, you know, we're looking at the TV, but I try to put myself from their perspective. They're looking out. I mean, they can see like this high, barely over. They can see the mountains, and they know that when that door drops, you know, like you said, it's somewhere in between bravery and with patriotism, and I would say almost insanity, because a lot of them know that they're just going to open that door and just be like, wow, here it goes. And they're just going to open up those machine guns. But yeah, it's very, like, even talking about it right now, thinking about it, yeah, it gets me, yeah, very tense. So,
and that's interesting you said, because I watched on the extra features on my, I still have the DVD copy, I need to upgrade that a little bit. But on the extra features, you know, Spielberg even mentioned interviewing, you know, thousands and thousands of World War II vets for this, the movie and the scene in particular. And many of them were quoted as saying, as soon as the boat ramp dropped, the entire boat was just mowed right over with machine gun fire, and they just, not a single person lived, almost instantaneous death for the whole. I mean, I couldn't fathom being around that, and you're still trying to run towards it. What are your thoughts, Ian?
No way. Absolutely could not picture that ever in my life. The people who's went through that and survived just have obviously been dealing with that probably every second of their life since. But yeah, just this, the calm before the storm, you know, I just, I think they show Captain Miller, played by Tom Hanks. I think that's the first time we see his hand shaking.
At the canteen,
So yeah. it's just kind of, you know, just so scary almost.
And that's a great scene because, you know, when that movie came out, Tom Hanks, we know he's the star of the movie because he's already the back-to-back Academy Award winner at that point.
Should have won it for this one too.
But when it's sitting there shaking, you don't think it's going to be the leader of the unit. You watch the whole movie, you think it's just going to be some Joe Schmo. And when it came out, I was like, oh my gosh, I forgot that was Captain Miller. That was Tom Hanks' character that we see shaking. So I thought that was a cool way to show even everybody, not a single person was sitting there just cool as a cucumber, you know, just showing fear in their own way. But with that, once the ramps drop, they start charging in towards the machine gun nest, and they have all the obstacles that the Germans have obviously set up on the beach. One thing I couldn't help but think of was how much influence I saw from that scene. And we talked about it earlier. That was kind of the introduction, at least for me, of the shaky cam and action scenes that kind of dominated like the first decade or so of action movies, where just they use shaky cam to give it a much more realistic, you're there experience. I also couldn't help but feel like I saw so many similarities between that shaky cam and the just moving around in the confusion between something that came out very recently, Game of Thrones, the Battle of Winterfell, something I never thought I would think of when I think of Saving Private Ryan, but I thought it was very cool how I was like, wow, there's like some similarities here that I wouldn't have expected. So the influence isn't just war movies. I mean, action movies. We're talking about a fantasy TV show. I mean, it's far and wide, but some of the scenes on that beach where we're seeing the violence and that stuff happen, what are some of the things when they actually start charging that stood out most to you guys? We'll start with Ian on this one.
I mean, you can't get past the one-armed soldier picking up his own arm.
Yeah.
It's just unbelievable, man. Like, and, you know, obviously he's in some sort of, like, adrenaline mode where he doesn't feel pain and he's just retrieving his own arm, but it's just, whew, bone-chilling.
Yeah, and I think just when that came out, I remember that like that's the part I remember so many people were just stuck on. And now what I do for a living, I teach safety in the workplace. So I actually hear stories very similar to that. And that's how people react, man. They're usually the calmest person in the room for the first, you know, minute of that injury. And then shock kicks in, but it's that adrenaline. And like him just looking for his arm, that's how I hear a lot of those stories, so that's very, very on point. Anything stand out to you from that scene, John?
Yeah, I think we're talking about the visual part with the audio as well, man. Just the whistling of the rounds and just hitting everything from the obstacles to the, you know, even when they're going in the water and you see people still getting popped by the rounds or whatever, and then, you know, just brutal. Just brutal to run towards that. And, yeah, you're right. I mean, with all the visual effects, it's very personal in that you feel like you're there. And the shaky and where are we going, kind of GoPro, but with, like, better quality. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And then just randomly ending up back with Captain Miller again and him, you know, probably knocked a little silly from the concussions of the rounds landing nearby. Also, just I mean, you know, it shows him looking around, seeing the carnage. Mm-hmm. And then, boom, right back into more action. The one thing that stood out to me that I didn't necessarily remember is there are, like, with those rounds going down, just very, they don't highlight it, but there's literally body parts and stuff just randomly flying around on scene. And you know, the one where they focus on the guy picking his arm up, you get it. But this time around, I watched, I really focused on that. I was like, wow, there's just like body parts getting blasted everywhere. And all these strange human reactions that people have. This one's a little, once they kind of get onto the beach, the guy whose helmet gets hit, that's another one of those that people talk about all the time.
Bastard, and then he takes it
hits it, takes it off, looks at it, and then
boom,
whammo, bammo. Anything else from that, just that particular part, where they're charging, that stands out to you guys?
Oh, yeah. We still got like five more moments to go through in this whole scene. I always pay close attention to all the medic scenes.
Mm.
Just, you know, everyone in the military respects medics. You have to for what they do and what they go through. But, you know, especially being infantry and seeing that in my own experience in Iraq and what medics have to do. But when he's like, they're treating the guy, and then we finally stop the bleeding, and then boom, the guy gets popped in the head, and, you know, he gets pissed and throws whatever. It's just unimaginable.
Yeah, I thought it was great how the medics were really on point when they were doing that. You know what I mean? They were just focused on that. They weren't focused with the carnage or the bullets or anything. They were just focused on trying to save him with the hope that the big Red Cross on their helmet would do what it was supposed to, right? Enemy's not supposed to fire at the medics on the battlefield.
Good luck.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I think they were just like, well, that's the rules, so we're just going to drive on and try to save as many as we can. And I thought that was cool because that's also a thing. Man, medics are just cool cucumbers. They just get to business and do what they got to focus on. So cool. Anything else for you, John?
Yeah, or when they finally like create like a casualty checkpoint, I guess, and they're kind of all lined up and it's a priority. And it's just, you know,
I think he says routine,
priority.
This one's priority.
Yeah, and then he's gone, and just going through that, and it's just, you know, like one guy like basically just holding his guts in. It's just pretty brutal. So.
And the one doing it, man, they were cold and very calculated, and you have to be.
Yes,
you have to be. This is we're trying to save as many people as we can. We're trying to mitigate more so than be heroes to the world, and you have to make those tough choices. That would be some of the stuff as they move further into the beach and they actually break through the wire and start getting ahead. Some of the stuff that really stood out to me. Because when you talk World War II, we're talking Greatest Generation, and sometimes it's almost, in my opinion, turned into caricature in movies. Yeah. But they steered clear of that in this one, and
They're just regular guys.
Yeah, they're regular guys, and they're not following all the protocol. Germans hands up, they're surrendering.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, buddy, you just killed a bunch of our guys. You know, no go. And. You know, whether you think that's appropriate or not, that's real. I mean, that's a decision people are going to make on the spot. One of your guys gets killed by them, you're going to be hard pressed to get people to be like, oh yeah, we'll take you into our prisoner of war. So there was things like that that really stood out to me, and I like it because it gave a more realistic image of what they went through during that. I just, this scene's so important and so big and so long, such a good chunk of the movie.
Yeah.
What's one of those other scenes you got, Ian?
The radio guy with Captain Miller. So he's trying to tell him, you know, the beach is not secure, and the radio guy's radioing into headquarters. And then, they turn away, and then he's like, okay, let's send another radio through. And then, of course, the guy's face is gone, you know, he's dead. And then, of course, Tom Hanks tries to use the radio. Bullet holes all over it, just throws it down. It's just, you know, what can you do?
This whole movie, man, it's everything that can go wrong. It's Murphy's Law to the fullest. Everything that can go wrong is going wrong. Even later in the movie, every place they stop, you guys aren't the reinforcements, you're not nearly enough people,
right?
No, we're not,
right?
We'll help a little bit and then we got to drive on. We got this mission. That's kind of like us today. We had several of the our normal front row guys, but they had some stuff pop up, so we're the replacements you get, whether you wanted us or not. One last one I want to point out was when they took the flamethrower.
Thank you. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
First of all, they had a freaking flamethrower, which is just awesome.
Yeah.
They blast out that shooting nest, and the one guy just yells, "Don't shoot them, let them burn."
Yep.
And you know, just knowing that they're Nazis, like, not a single person in the world's like, no, we should end their suffering.
Right, right.
Yeah. Nazis, history's greatest villain. So everybody's pretty pretty okay with that. So going on from there with the story, unless there's another scene that you got one more that pops out. I mean, there's just so much. It, like you said, It's a good 25 minutes of the movie, and there's so much happening. You got to watch it over and over and over just to pick out all the little things. And they're really trying to highlight, you know, just that handful of guys with Captain Miller. Mm-hmm. So once they go on from there, they drive on, and then they get their new mission of the title of the movie, Saving Private Ryan. And what I thought most interesting with that is right out the gate, you know, our mission is to save one guy to get him out of the war because all his brothers are dead. And the whole unit just thinks it's the worst mission, the dumbest mission. Mm-hmm. They can't wrap their head around using all these other men's lives to save one life. But what I thought was interesting, because to me it seemed over the course of the movie, they all started to buy into it. Mm-hmm. Then the closer they get. And then by the end of the movie, when they actually meet Private Ryan, there's some of those head nods like, we should have done this. Yep. This was mm-hmm. An important mission to save this guy. His
right
mom,
thing to do.
His mom should not have, she should not have lost all of her children in this war. Just to me, over time, as they evolved on it and they actually saw it as an important mission and saw the moral importance of it, I thought that was really cool. But you got to really reflect on it, because right out of the gate, other than Captain Miller, who doesn't, you know, he maintains his officer stoicism.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of them, just the whole movie, griping. And then I thought that was really cool how they chipped away at that. But as we're moving the story along, what are some things with the story that are... after the beach, we've hit the beach. Now we're trying to save Private Ryan. What are some of the scenes that are standing out to you guys and interactions they have, especially? Because that's where we finally get to see the team in action. Before, it's just this massive scale. As we said the stats earlier, this scale is just unfathomable to me now. And they really did a great job of showing the scale close up. Now we're with the team. So what are some standouts? We'll start with you, John.
All right, so as far as the story, with the team, the Ranger squad, so to speak, led by Captain Miller, I think really portrays the camaraderie and how tight the military can be, and some of the dark humor and how they know each other and different walks of life. I mean, you name it, coming from the military, they really portrayed that well. And you know, as they move forward, it's just kind of one of those things, they because it's war and they're going way deep into the enemy territory, you can see how even amongst themselves, how they kind of I think the first big checkpoint, they hit that village or whatever, where, you know, they try to save the girl or whatever, and how they just kind of morph back into the regular, and then it's like, boom, you know, that scene's done, and then every little thing they kind of move forward, but then they're still their little family. And that's what I've always loved about that, because it's like a squad size element, and you name it, they've got their leader, they got their platoon sergeant, they've got a medic,
machine gunner,
they got an interpreter, you know, and then you've got your stereotypical
sniper.
young punk from New York, and then you've got
he's my favorite.
Yeah, and then the bruiser played by Vin Diesel, and then, you know, so you name it. I think they did very good at kind of, you know. And, oh, then the sharpshooter. Yeah. So, and big names in this movie, too. And I'm not very good with actors' names. But when you go back, you're like, shit. And it was like, those were movies before they got big.
Yeah. Barry Pepper, I think, is a sniper.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Vin Diesel.
Not big yet.
Paul Giamatti was in it. I mean, he was a name, but he wasn't like, you know, big, huge. Yeah, absolutely. There were Giovanni Ribisi is another one. Like you said, you mentioned Barry Pepper. That's what stood out to me.
Love Tom Sizemore.
Brian Cranston was in it a little earlier, and I was like, whoa. I had no idea he was in this.
Now, how did he lose his arm? Because he was a colonel, so we're talking like World War One.
He may have fought.
Probably. I don't know. They didn't really elaborate.
I was that was something I was interested in.
There you go. We're gonna get a prequel.
But But no, along with like the team camaraderie, I found it like I really was looking for the, because these are Rangers. This is not regular Army. This is way, way up there, close to elite. You know, I think the only thing better than them would be Special Forces, and I don't know if that existed back then. I'm sure it did.
I don't think so. I think the original Ranger bat and all that stuff came out around the World War II era.
Yeah, so they were the top.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get this interpreter gets thrown in. He has no idea what he's doing. He grabs a freaking German helmet when they first meet him. And then, of course, Captain Miller is like, is that a souvenir? And then he grabs his own, you know, American soldier helmet. I found that to be just great. And I again, I love the dynamic between hardcore Ranger infantry compared to now we get this non-combat guy involved with us, and then we still have to like coexist and go through, you know, France and still do all this battle. I love all those interactions.
Yeah, I agree, and I like how they didn't the interpreter did not get let into the unit easily,
right?
And they gave him a hard nonstop hard time with pretty much everything. So yeah, that's what I liked about it, because I've been the guy who was the new guy in a unit that just got back from a deployment, and you got to earn your way in.
Yeah, you're on the outside.
And I wasn't. I didn't go overseas and join up with them, which would be
harder.
a different kind of difficult. So I liked that aspect of it, and moving into the sharpshooter scene where. Mm. Vin Diesel's, Caparzo?
Yep.
Private Caparzo is trying to take the girl, and he says, you know, it's the right thing to do. And Captain Miller comes in and he says, the right's not what we're doing. We're doing orders. We follow orders. Uses a little more foul language than that, but we'll keep it clean for you, NPR. That whole scene, though, where he gets shot, I actually talk a lot about that, oddly enough, in safety, when I talk safety, because he got shot, and they wanted to. Man, they wanted to. The medic wanted to get in there so damn bad and help him out, mm-hmm. and they said, no, you got to eliminate the threat. We've got to take care of that sniper.
Mm-hmm.
And that whole scene, the way that plays out, the cat and mouse of it, and then as soon as he sees Barry Pepper's character, mm-hmm. and you hear it. You see the flash, then you hear it, and then bam, gone. Yeah. What a great scene. And I love Barry Pepper's character. He's probably my favorite character in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But that whole scene, man, that scene's just lack of a better term, killer.
Yep.
what an awesome scene. But that's where, you know, that's where stuff also starts to fray for them. You know, they're losing members of their team. They are they're not quite sure that they're buying into this mission.
Yeah. Oh, they're totally questioning that.
And that's the point where we start to see some friction. And the way they talk about Captain Miller, too, I mean, almost in a mythical mm-hmm. fashion. I know I have some folks I've served with where we refer to them in pretty mythical fashion. And he portrays himself as that, you know, that here's the mission, here's my job, here's your job, let's focus on the task at hand. But even he starts to lose, and a little later on, elements of his professionalism and trying to seek this mission out. So I thought that was a very important scene for a couple reasons, because it starts to give us a little friction internally. Now, as they move on, the thing that stood out to me is something I didn't expect, is when they start having that infighting, and you got a private arguing with a captain, mm-hmm. and some other things that threw me off. One, that those interactions, I couldn't even fathom such a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that I couldn't fathom is units getting broke up and people just winding up in random units. Just because our communication's so much better now, the way we do head counts, equipment counts, all that stuff. I mean, if you weren't with the unit you were attached with and not accounted for, holy cow, stuff's falling apart.
Yeah.
And I get it. Communication was different than the scope is, like, it's, once again, use this word over and over, unfathomably huge, you know. That's another thing that threw me off, just random dudes and random units. Like,
yeah.
Holy, how does this work? I don't even. So that's where we start to see all that stuff start to happen. And that's something that I thought was cool. So moving forward from there, what are some other scenes as we're moving on? We got quite a bit of space till we get to the bridge, but let's expedite that a little bit. What are some of those scenes that really stand out that led to the bridge?
Let's see. God,
they meet that pilot from the crashed plane. You know, mm-hmm. where you see the one star general is dead inside in the cockpit. They can, mm-hmm. or wherever he's at, they can't get him out.
Mm-hmm.
And then they all like pop their heads in the plane and they're having this discussion. Mm-hmm. I love all that. You know, and then the pilot's just basically saying, "We tailored this aircraft to protect the general, but this is actually what killed him." You know, and mm-hmm. it's just I love it.
Yeah. And then they get to the part where they're looking through the toe tags as the units walk by.
Yes.
And the medic starts yelling at him. And even Captain Miller, right? That's where we start to see him not quite recognizing everybody outside of his tight-knit little family.
Tunnel vision, yeah.
And you could see it on his face a little bit. Ah, we messed up.
Yep.
We'll put this away and drive on. But then he just starts yelling at everybody. Where is he? Where's Private Ryan? You know, mm-hmm. and all the guys are like, whoa, he's not quite conducting himself with that scene. Yeah. So even then, that's really where you see him questioning that mission. So yeah, that's a great scene.
And we forgot about the first Private Ryan. From when?
Nathan Fillion.
My brothers are dead. You know, like, my gosh.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. There was a whole scene.
Captain of the Serenity, man.
Brings them down a notch when they're in the church. Remember that part after that little scene, and then they go to the church.
Like the first night, yeah.
Yeah, and then you start to see, I'm trying to think of some significant parts from that. But you see Tom Sizemore's character and Tom Hanks kind of talking more one-on-one, and then you see, you know, the troops kind of palling around doing their own thing. And I think the doc goes into his story about
staying up for his mom. Yeah, you're right. Yeah,
how to fall asleep or something like that. So you see both sides, and it's really interesting to me because I remember even it's nowhere near what it was like for them, but like that church and being in that environment right there was like awesome. Like being like, you know, oh, we get to, you know, have some chow, sit down, lay down, smoke and joke, do this and that.
Yeah,
it was like those little moments of like, okay, you know, let's sit down and do this. That always stuck out to me too, that scene. I don't know if I'm really, you guys know what I'm talking about.
It's the camaraderie.
It's hard to explain.
The joking and smoking. It's not about the living conditions. It's mm-hmm. about the brotherhood you're experiencing in that time.
Yeah, man. And Upham has that quote from Waldo Emerson. I forget his first name, probably Robert.
Ralph.
And I'm going to butcher the quote, so I'm not even going to say it. But, you know, basically, like, war empowers the senses, you know what I mean? And he's just barely figuring that out, Upham is.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you're measuring yourself differently after war. I feel like that was the quote of the movie. I wish I remembered it.
And it wasn't even written for the movie. Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. The whole thing, I'm bad with the names. The medic, Giovanni Ribisi's character, talks about the falling asleep. Literally 10 minutes after that, my daughter came down saying how she couldn't sleep. And I just stole what he said and used it on her.
Try and stay awake.
And it worked. She totally fell asleep. So he's not lying. That was awesome. There's just so many great scenes. Then you get where they kind of take the side mission, which is kind of right before we get to the bridge.
What, the machine gun nest?
Yeah, the nest where, you know, they're saying, hey, it's not part of our mission. And even though I think Captain Miller knows they're probably right, he rationalizes it, saying, what about the guys behind us?
Yeah.
I think he was just so over the mission at that point, he just wanted to take out as many Nazis as possible. That's the feel I got. But that's the scene. That's the scene where our interpreter, Upham, argues about against everybody that he is a surrendering POW and that they shouldn't kill him. And we know how that comes to bite him in the end. But what are your thoughts? Because, you know, nowadays, if remotely thinking about shooting that guy, I mean, that's big trouble. It's all tracked now. It's a little bit different how things go down.
Right.
So to me, I got what those guys wanted to do, but to me, it was so ingrained in me that, you know, hands up, you just take them and zip tie them and throw them in the back of something. Obviously, it's a little different approach then. But what are your guys' thoughts on that interaction?
I mean,
and how the end result is
in 1944? Yeah, I'm shooting that dude. But I actually really like that scene for the German soldier's vulnerability, like when he's going through all the Americans. I love America, Betty Boo. You know, whoever has nice gams or whatever. I just saw the movie, so those are fresh on my mind. You know, and he says F Hitler. Like, I just love everything he goes through to try and stay alive. And then of course we see him at the end of the movie, and you know, up and pops him.
Yeah. And he's the one who takes out Captain Miller, so that right. was extra hard. That's why Upham finally just said, okay, I screwed up. I made a bad choice.
Yeah.
So let's bring that into their interaction. They finally get to the bridge.
Well, we're skipping over one part there because you know how they were talking about, you know, building Captain Miller up. That's the scene where he was like, you know, what's the stakes up to now? Da 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 da. And he goes, let's back up because you know, the squad is kind of fighting whether to let him go, which is what basically like Captain Miller saying one thing, the sergeant saying one thing, Upham's the one that started. So you got like three against these five. One person's about ready to desert.
Yeah.
And they're F you, F this, you know, kill him, kill him, kill him, da 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 da. And he comes in right with this curveball that he knows that'll shut him up because no one knows anything about him and says, yeah, I was an English teacher. I coached baseball in the spring, da 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 da. And everyone, you could just see them like they're just like, what the fuck? Like they just stopped thinking about, let's kill this dude, let's kill this dude. And they went back to themselves as a individual, a person, and were like, shit. And it just set them straight. And very, very, very powerful scene. And this is, you know, after they lose the medic too, and another brutal bloodbath of he's shot everywhere, and you know, you guys know the scene, but yeah, that part, I love that part.
No, that's a good
brings
point.
Brings him back down because, you know, and he says something about, he's like, oh, I wonder if there'll be days when my wife will recognize me.
Yeah.
And that's the part of going off to war. You become this monster or see the monster within yourself to do these types of things to kill the enemy. And then it's like, you got to come back home to, you know, baseball, apple pie, and, you know, Chevrolet and stuff like that.
Comfort.
So,
no, that's a great scene. I thought it did, you know, it kind of broke down his mythologized self to them. But also, I think it showed them, like, I'm a really, really regular dude.
Yeah.
And I'm giving it my best and making the best decisions I can make and pulling myself up to this level where you guys are going to look up to me. Mm-hmm. I'm just a teacher, man. I coach sports. Like, I'm just a dude, and I'm stepping it up.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to make these judgment calls. So, you're right. That's a good scene.
another point to kind of drive that home of how can you go back home and tell your wife about stuff like this, or how can you just be home in general? I really liked when I think it was Captain Miller in this scene, and he says, "With every person I kill, I get further away from home." Mm-hmm. You know, it's just he sums it up right there.
Yeah. One more thing he mentioned in a different scene that I want to highlight, and then we're good to go to the bridge, I think, is how he compartmentalizes so very well, where he talks about every soldier you lose, you gotta tell yourself, but we lost one soldier, but we saved 10 people or 100 people.
Yeah. Right?
And it was very interesting how he walked through the process of compartmentalizing. And then you know, that right there, you talk – some of the mental health stuff going on in the veteran community. I mean, right there, the whole deal is a lot of compartmentalization, then coming home and not compartmentalizing anymore and getting it out. So I thought that was a very cool scene and an interesting thing that he said.
And war definitely, you know, and us veterans especially, obviously we feel that. Like, war separates you from mainstream America, from, you know, civilians in general. It's just, It's kind of a cool feeling. You know, that's just how I look at it, but, you know, others take it how they want to.
Yeah. So let's see. We get to the bridge. One thing I thought, you know, right out the gate, once they finally meet the right James Jimmy Francis Ryan from Iowa, finally get the right one, and the debate that ensues between Private Ryan and Captain Miller and the unit, you know, about how they argue with him that we lost guys on this, which kind of blew his mind away.
Yeah, he felt horrible as soon as he heard
Captain Miller was down to let him stay and fight. And I kind of, I, I kind of like the agreement they came to, and everybody was just on board, and it was, we're going to stay, and we're going to do this, and we're going to keep you alive.
Yeah.
And we're going to try to keep as many alive and defend this bridge, and and we're going to do it. And it wasn't the mission became less or more important, but it was just like, look, we got all these guys, and we got all this stuff that this is to protect, this one bridge. We got to protect it. And they really realized that that mission and those other guys on that bridge were also their brothers. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe not the tight-knit brothers that they were, but they recognized that. So I love the agreement they kind of all finally came to.
And specifically with that agreement, I just to get deep into that moment with Captain Miller and Tom Sizemore's character, I just know he's an E7, Sergeant First Class. I'm not sure what his name is, but he's like, you don't want to hear what I think about that. And then Tom Hanks is like, actually, Mike, I do. I just love when hardcore military people use first names, when they just throw away some military bearing. And actually, yeah. Mike, I do want to hear it. You know, that's kind of deep to me.
Yeah, when your first name comes out in the military, it's weird.
Yeah.
Feels weird. I'm like, I didn't even know you knew my first name.
Exactly. Exactly.
Which is weird. These are the people you're closest with in the world. You don't ever call each other by your first names unless it's like, it's something.
It always sounds weird.
It does. And now I got friends years apart, and I'm like, I feel weird calling by their first name.
Yep.
yeah, it was a cool scene. But I like the whole plan that they developed. I love that Captain Miller, after kind of opening himself up to everybody, goes right back and, but there's a reason you follow me.
Right.
And I'm knowledgeable. I'm smart.
Sticky bomb.
And I'm good at this. Yeah, I love that.
Field manual.
Yeah. I love that part.
Field manual, sir.
But it was great because once they laid the problem out, he goes, here's what I would do if I were them. So here's what we should. He just had a plan and was ready.
Yeah.
And he was able to get everybody to adjust fire to it. And great sign of leadership right there. That corporal was in charge, which is, you know, that's pretty low rank to be the highest ranking dude.
They're way out there.
I mean, yeah, they're like Lord of the Flies. Yeah. They're like children out there governing themselves. And then Captain comes in, and you can see if they're Lord of the Flies for a little while, how they might be a little apprehensive.
Resistant.
But
yeah,
as soon as he started talking, they're like,
okay.
Yes, sir. Whatever, sir. What do we need to do, sir? And I thought that was just awesome. And he really proved how smart of a leader he was, how elite that unit was. So I super dug just the planning part of that, but that whole scene, the defending of the bridge up until Allied forces come in and get their back. What's the standouts? What are things that what are some of the stuff you like on that one?
Again, a lot to sift through here. Actually, what I was thinking about when you were talking, their plan actually was working, and they were getting to them, and I've seen it enough to where I can actually recall, and it's one guy wasn't able to gauge the fuse correctly, and if he would have got that either on the tank, I think it was, to knock that part out, and then it kind of shifted, and then there was like that 9mm gun on the wheels or whatever that came around and boop, 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 you know, took out like 10 of them. And at that point, that's a lot for what they had. And maybe it wasn't that many, but it was a lot.
Because
they were all getting
all on the tank,
right.
Take them out. And once that happened, and then it shifted, and then it was just like, okay, almost close to retreat. Like, they lost a foothold there. I was thinking about that. I mean, it was working. I mean, strategically, the plan they came up with was working, and then it shifted. And that's war, I guess. So
Yeah. Yeah, one that stands out to me was the interpreter, you know, Upham just was going with the flow, and then he just slowly starts to fall apart as the German forces become more and more overwhelming, and he falls completely apart. And because of that, you know, lost another, at least one, if not both, those other guys he was with, and who knows if they'd have had a reloaded machine gun, what kind of damage they could have done. So him falling apart, but that's a very real thing, you know. It's a very human reaction to it, and it's in those moments you got to step up, and everybody's rooting for him to step up to save his buddy's life. So I think that makes the hand-to-hand knife kill that happens to one of our guys even more tough, just because, you know, like, he's got backup right down the steps.
Yeah, right. That's
and
brutal.
He just
that
can't step it up. And then the fact that it was the guy that he talked them into letting go, you know, makes it even more powerful. What about you, Ian? What's the standout moment of that whole sequence?
I mean, it's Adam Goldberg plays the American casualty, right?
Yes.
No, it's that scene. It's, you know, of him just completely falling apart and, you know, he's a non-combat guy, so, like, I guess that could be foreseen. And then, you know, that's why the Rangers give him so much crap in the beginning, because they expect that from him, unfortunately. But, you know, after seeing, like, Avengers Endgame, it's that Thor almost had that same, he almost got Adam Goldberg, you know? That's what stands out to me.
Okay. Well, from there, you know, we're taking mass casualties. Everybody's getting hurt. We've gotten across the bridge, and then as they're doing that, once again, the guy, the German Nazi soldier they let go, is the one who gets Captain Miller with a shot right as he's trying to get the fuse set up so he can blow the bridge as they're coming across. And he's just sitting there with his dying breath, sort of trying, not really doing anything. That's it. You know that that's it. Perfect timing. Allied forces come in and
angels on our shoulders, I think.
Yeah. And take out the trouble. The rest of the Germans, you know, throw their hands up. And that's where Upham is able to, you know, belatedly correct himself and take out that Nazi soldier. But it was interesting because the Nazi soldier, you know, was kind of trying to go, hey, we're buddies,
hey, we're
remember that? And then he just blasts them away. And the other guys go, okay. And then, pretty powerful stuff. Is there anything else on that scene that stands out you want to hit on?
Tom Sizemore, again, he's probably my second favorite just because his lines are just so epic to me. You know, he gets shot. He was, like, shot in the hip. He was already hurt before that. Then he gets shot in the right shoulder, probably lung. And he's like, just got the wind knocked out of me. I'm all right. You know, and he's dead, like, 3 minutes later. I just love everything he has to say, pretty much.
Yeah, that was great. And then the end brings us to the quote Tom Hanks says to Private Ryan, earn this.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Man. So I'm, I don't get too emotional, just like, oh, God. Mm-hmm. You better earn it, man. And then him at the end, at Captain Miller's grave, just saying, I can't even talk about it right now. It was just that scene right there is the one, man, where I'm not an emotional dude. That one got me. Where he's just like, I hope me just being a good man is good enough. And the thing is, after we watched that whole movie with Captain Miller, 100%, dude, you know, that's all I want is that, just be a good guy, live a good life. Man, that part got me. So with that being said, let's talk about a little bit of the acting. We've kind of hit some of the actors that really stood out, but what's your breakdown? Tom Hanks, I thought, you know,
deserved best actor.
On point as he always is. I don't even know, was he nominated that year?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know the nominations for that year. I just know Shakespeare in Love, far superior, I guess.
Right? It was actually the guy who won best actor, it was some Italian movie that won the Cannes Film Festival that year. And then, of course, the actor from that wins best actor over Tom Hanks, which I... unforgivable to the Academy. Come on.
Yeah. You gotta do politicking with the Academy.
Of course.
So whatever. Heck with them. Yeah, he was great as always.
I think
we've hit the... Well, another big movie came out that year, Godzilla, American version. We're not talking about Matthew Broderick for Oscar. I don't know why that hasn't come up. But, we had two actors that you guys... I named one, you named one that really stand out. I think Barry Pepper, Tom Sizemore. Those really are like the... Tom Hanks did what I expected him to do and just rocked it. But those two, those are the two standouts to me. I just loved Barry Pepper as the fine instrument of war.
Yep.
And Tom Sizemore, kind of laid back, going to take care of business when I need to.
Perfect,
ruffled NCO.
Perfect platoon sergeant. Ruffled NCO, exactly. You know, that's the E7 you want. Like, he's lazy. He ain't getting excited about nothing. But he'll always, like, just cut the BS and give it to you straight. And he's always going to be dependable. I love that dude. Had the pleasure of working under a few of those in my time. But another one, Edward Burns played that Brooklyn dude. And I don't even know him from much else, honestly. To me, this is his biggest role. I really enjoyed his character also.
Yeah, I think he was a guy they thought was going to kind of take off and then just
never did.
Kind of fizzled. Tom Sizemore also kind of fizzled. I don't even know why. Did you see The Relic? What a great movie.
Oh, yeah, I loved it.
Really?
Don't remember it, but I know I liked
it. It's really bad. So those are the standouts to me. You got any actors that, like, stood out to you?
Well, I'm going through the cast here on the internet here, and when they stopped through the village, Ted Danson.
Saves the day.
Yeah.
I didn't even recognize him at first. It took me a few scenes. I was like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I mean he was one of those that was already well established at that point. And then Paul Giamatti.
Yeah.
He was one of the sergeants. This cat, the colonel that starts the scene or starts the mission, you know, don't want to exclude them either. But we already touched on the main folks in the squad. But I guess if I have to go with just straight acting, I guess Tom Sizemore. I don't know why. He just, you know, he scoops up the dirt and the
fat,
and he just, you could tell he is that NCO, you know, staff NCO. He is like been there, done that. He's like the rationale, but still mission oriented.
Sure.
He still kind of can be around the Joes, but still, you know, be that linchpin between the officer, him, you know. So I love his character a lot. But maybe second best. Oh, man, I don't know. I'm trying to.
I mean, the medic's up there.
Yeah, Giovanni Ribisi. Yeah, he was really good. Really good. That death scene.
I mean, Matt Damon, can't forget him, sorry.
No, that death scene, though, when the medic is dying, that one did hit me because just, like, the whole team was there.
Yeah.
And they're just reassuring him. They know what the end result is.
Yeah.
He knows the end result, but they're just reassuring him. And, you know, he's there literally dying in the arms of his brother, so I thought that was pretty, just all around heavy, heavy scene for acting.
And again, they nailed that. You know, everyone in the military loves medics. They just hammered it home with that with that moment. Because who's more liked than that guy in the whole? Yeah, nobody's more.
Doc's got your back.
Yeah.
Let's move on. Any quotes? What quotes you got stand out, Ian?
Pass me on this one.
Okay, too many curse words.
Look, I wash for supper.
Yeah, exactly.
I laugh every time at that because that's probably something I could see myself saying, like, I don't care, surrender them. Yeah, shoot you, dude. Like, and then just, that's kind of like an inside joke with another one of my buddies. We'll just be like, look, I watched for supper. And that with that little accent or whatever, too, is a good quote.
Yeah.
Foobar, shooting scoot, Captain Miller has so many good one-liners.
Yeah,
you have to pay attention too because it's kind of jargon and you know there's a lot going on so you do have to pay attention.
Well, even with the jargon, most of it's like past our time. Some of them are like I don't even know what that means.
Some of it was still around, you know. Yeah. And then so I was like 13 in '98 when this came out, and so of course like the next school year, FUBAR was like the most popular word, you know, amongst all me and my friends.
There you go. Mine was. Don't shoot them, let them burn.
Yeah.
I don't know. It encapsulates hopefully everyone's feeling towards the Nazis. So, and war is a cruel, cruel, tough place. But from there, what I want to riff on as we start wrapping up here, you know, you mentioned FUBO. We were using it in school. This movie was a massive hit. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but on that documentary, Spielberg talks about how he thought it would do okay, you know, war movies, but I didn't realize, really, before that movie, there really hadn't been a big World War II movie for over 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would I have known at the time? I was in junior high, you know.
Sure.
I didn't know any different. But there was also the fear because it was so violent, so visceral, so extreme, showing the extremes of how truly brutal war could be, that they thought it was just going to be a middle-of-the-road, at best kind of movie, and then it wound up being just a massive, massive hit. And like I said, in my estimation, I think from what you guys said, you know, the war movie.
Yeah.
You know, all war movies are now based on.
Yeah, it's the gold standard.
And compared to. So that was pretty amazing.
And then just as far as reach goes, I think in 98 it was the highest grossing domestic film. Don't know however many millions it made. And then I think it was second internationally only to Armageddon.
Well, wow. Also classic.
Yeah. And then actually, just something else about that year in 98, you know, I love the 90s. That's like the best decade in film, in my opinion. But I think Thin Red Line came out that same year. And it's like, you know, why would you do two World War II epics in the same year? But I really like them both. But
I've never seen the Thin Red Line, but I can't stand Terrence Malick. So anytime I can bash on him at an open platform, I will.
I really like that movie.
Terrence Malick sucks. So I'm glad we got that out there.
Fine.
Don't like that director.
Did this come out before Band of Brothers? It did, didn't it?
Yes, yeah. Because Easy Company's in it.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
They come across. We're with Easy Company. I was like, oh, Band of Brothers. Awesome.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, so I think, I don't know the backstory behind that, but probably he was like, all right, made this awesome movie, and I'm going to go make a whole series.
Well, that's where Spielberg and Tom Hanks are the executive producers.
Teamed
on
up.
That. Yeah. Yeah, very cool. Doing. So, yeah, they kept going with it. And really, even though it's art, I think it also did a really good job of really informing a newer generation of this war and keeping the legacy of these fighting men and women alive and letting people know really how tough they had it and how cruel it was. And you know, our deployments, a lot of folks are doing multiple deployments over and over. I mean, these folks are talking years since they've seen family members. Mm-hmm. So some of this stuff is... That's hard to wrap your head around, too, just being over there for 1, 2, 3 years, 4.
Right. Like,
that's tough stuff.
It's just, you know, I did two tours, a total of like 22 months deployment. And, you know, that's just absolutely nothing compared to the several year or the few years some of these men spent over there.
Yeah, absolutely. So any final thoughts on the movie, John?
No, it's still talking about it. I mean, it remains my favorite. It's the standard, so I'll probably go home and watch it tonight or later on next week for Memorial Day or around D-Day. So that's how much I like it. But again, it's still to this day, it's hard for me to watch because I gotta make sure I'm in the right headspace to watch this movie. It's not a movie for me, and I don't know if it could just be me that I can just go watch because there's a lot of emotion in the movie that, you know, I may not be in the best place to watch it. You know,
sure.
I think if a war movie, in my opinion, is worth its salt, it's not a movie you can just throw on and just watch over and over.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it might be an entertaining movie, but I don't know that I'd call it a good war movie because a good war movie should be set in a way where, one, we're honoring, you know, the fighting men and women and paying respect to their legacy, but also showing the brutality of it, you know? War's not – we don't want to make war seem like this grand, great thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think any war movie worth its salt, you got to get in the right headspace.
Yeah.
So I'm 100% with you on that assessment. Yeah. Ian, what are your thoughts?
I can't say enough about Tom Hanks and Captain Miller. You know, I already said he should have won Best Actor, but I love – the guy never raised his voice one time, and, like, everyone follows him. He's not a – he's not a, hey, I'm going to make these guys fear me, you know. No, you just respect the dude for, like, just being a regular guy but able to lead you with these, you know, things that he shows throughout the movie. I just – I can't – it's going to be understated how good of a job Tom Hanks did and with Captain Miller.
Yeah. And I love, you know, movies where there's good leaders. I love talking leadership, you know, philosophy of leadership. And it's always cool to see characters like that inspire you in real life, just seeing them on screen like that. So, totally agree.
Yeah, I didn't mention him at all, but it's almost one of those things where it feels like it's understood. That's how good he was. I mean, I know I mentioned, you know, Tom Sizemore, but of course, Tom Hanks, like, steals the show. And he's probably one of my favorite actors and perfect role, you know.
It is.
Maybe you've heard other people say this, but Tom Hanks is so good that you think, oh, well, that's what Captain Miller would be like if he was played by Tom Hanks. And it's just like, and his leadership style, lead by example, cool, calm, and collective, very good portrayal of what a good officer is, and just his role in the movie encapsulates it all around, I'd say, because if it wasn't for him, I guess, sort of, so to speak, and how good he was as an officer, he wouldn't have been chosen to do this mission. right. after everything they had already been through. So,
right.
yeah, I didn't want to leave that out. So,
yeah, no, absolutely.
You're exactly right. He's the, it seemed, you know, as far as the movie's concerned, he's the, you know, the biggest, the most important leader on the beach, it seemed like. And, you know, he actually survives, so that helps. And then, of course, the battalion commander gives his favorite captain the most important mission, you know, like you said, John. It's just, it's all on him.
Yeah.
Very good. All right. Well, boys, I appreciate you coming out talking about this movie. But as we head out, do you have anything that you you want to put out there, Ian?
Nope. Said it all. Thank you.
Said it all? Anybody want to check into Ian Family, or isn't Ian, Flug Family Chiropractic?
Let's do it.
I'll give you a snap, crackle, pop, stretch you, and you'll feel like a brand new person.
Thank
so,
you.
Flug Family Chiropractic, absolutely. John, you got anything you want to put out there?
Well, I don't know if this will post in time, but for Memorial Day, I just want to throw out there that me personally, Memorial Day is becoming one of my favorite holidays, just in that it kind of stands for, you know, that weekend that we give thanks and remembrance. And with it coming up, you know, just take a time to set aside and do that, and then but go about with your life if you're listening. So especially the veteran community, and do good things. So
yeah, very good. We're all members of the Chatham VFW here, right outside of Springfield. And we, with the American Legion, have a ceremony that we'll do on Memorial Day in our Veterans Memorial Square. But those of you out there, you don't live around here, look it up. Your local veterans organizations most likely are putting on a memorial service. It doesn't, you know, it's an hour of your day, and it's a way to meet with veterans and hear their stories of remembrance, and just a great way to communally come together and put this day in perspective. A couple other things I want to put out there before we shut her down. Also, on these weekends in May, a lot of your local veteran service organizations are doing poppy drives, mm-hmm. right? So it's a flower. You make a donation. The donation money usually goes to veterans in need. And you wear a poppy, and that poppy represents a service member that died in combat. So if you see them out there, hey, feel free to make a donation, because it absolutely goes to a good cause. And lastly, if you want to check out more stuff from the Front Row Network, you can go to our website at frnpod.com. You can also find more information at nprillinois.org. So thanks for hanging out with us, and thanks for leaving. We'll catch you on the flip side.